We talked a little bit about what honor looks like, and we also talked a little bit about what honor doesn't look like. So today, I'm going to somewhat continue that message, but I'm going to add a little bit of a grace piece to it. So I want to just explain a little bit before I start that every time pastors preach about grace, we set off religious bells. In other words, many of us have been brought up with the idea that sin is this horrible thing that separates us from God. Well, once we accept Christ, we are his sons and daughters. If your son or daughter does something that displeases you, that you've told them not to do, do they stop being your son or your daughter? No. Now, obviously, there's some strain in your relationship. So I want to just explain what I am not doing. I am not giving people permission to sin. That is not what I am saying. But sometimes that's what people hear when pastors talk about grace. Oh, well, Pastor Steve thinks it's okay to sin. No, but there's a difference between choosing to do what pleases God and choosing to not do what displeases God because you want to continue to have a close relationship with him. Versus, it's on a list, and if I don't do enough of the things on the list, I'm going to end up in hell, or I'm going to lose my salvation. Do you see the difference? We were in the Old Testament, we were in the kingdom of darkness, but we have been translated to the kingdom of light. So if we slip up in sin, we are not placing ourselves back in the kingdom of darkness. Okay, we don't jump. We don't jump families. Okay, it says in the Bible that the devil was our father before we accepted Christ. We don't jump back to his family, and we don't leave the kingdom of light and go to the kingdom of dark. But God is hoping that we make our choices based on whether we please him or not, versus whether it's on the list. This morning in my personal devotions, I was reading the comment where Jesus made about the old wine and the new wine and the old wineskins and the new wineskins. He was trying to explain to the religious people of the day that you can't take this new idea of how to have a kingdom, new covenant relationship with God and stick it back in the Old Testament. Like, it wasn't, okay, this is a new piece, and now I put this new piece back into my old piece. Because he said the wineskins won't hold them, the wineskins would burst. And then he also says that once you've had the old, you may not be excited to try new because the old is comfortable. So he's saying to them, you have to drop the old, pick up the new, and live in the new. And then Paul even goes so far to say that if you're trying to obey the old, like put yourself under a set of rules and regulations, then you have to obey every one of them. And that is, we already know from Romans that if we sin one time, we are not worthy to get into heaven because of our own goodness or because we've obeyed every one of the laws in the Old Covenant. Okay? So I am not giving anybody permission to sin today, but I'm saying that God looks at it differently than we sometimes look at it. And I'm hoping to help you make sense out of that. So stick with me a little bit here. All right, so let's start by thinking about the untrained, rough men that Father God told Jesus to pick as his disciples. I can tell you now that would not have been on my list. They may not have even been on the top 100. You know, President-elect Trump is working through these lists, and they start with what they call a long list, and then somebody gets on the short list. Okay, that means that you're like, there's a list of five or six people who might be this office in the cabinet. And so now you're on the short list. Most of these guys would not have been on my short or long list. So let's think about, we know at least four of the disciples were fishermen, possibly seven, because a couple of them we don't know what they are. But that was very prevalent because they live next to the ocean, next to the Mediterranean. And so you fished. Now, we don't live close there. So, you know, even though we have Creedy that goes out fishing and Marlin that goes out fishing, that's not their occupation. With these guys, that was their occupation. Now, of course, we have a bear hunter in our midst as well who got it with a bow and arrow. Now, come on. I mean, I could have three guns and still miss the thing. And he gets it with an arrow. Okay? So you talk about amazing. But that's still not his occupation. Okay? So the easiest way for me to think about fishing as an occupation is to think about lumberjacks. So if you think about lumberjacks, they're out all day, you know, in their flannel shirts and their leather pants, and they're felling trees. Now, they're doing physical labor all day. Okay, so sweaty, smelly, tattoos, maybe some piercings, language. Think about the language, lumberjacks. Okay, smoking, having buds with them all day. Now, I'm not saying all of Jesus' disciples were like that, but I'm saying they weren't nice, cleaned up religious folk. They were fishermen. And we know Peter had various problems, one being his mouth. He got himself into so much trouble because he said stuff before he thought. But he was also the guy that jumped out of the boat in the middle of the storm and walked to Jesus. So Jesus saw who they could be, not their past or even their present. James and John helped run their father's fishing empire. It's believed that they were fairly wealthy and that they didn't just fish, but they ran a whole crew. But they were called sons of thunder because they liked to pound people. They went out one day. I'm glad you're getting it. They went out one day, and they weren't accepted in a village. Remember Jesus sent them out? So they come back, and they say to Jesus, those people in Newville, they didn't want to hear anything we had to say. So now, Jesus, let me think about this, okay? Before we went out, you said you were giving us power to heal, power over sickness and disease. You also told us that you were giving us power over the enemy, so people that were oppressed or possessed by demons or evil spirits, that we could cast them out. And we did that. We want to know, did that include the power to call down fire from heaven? Because if it did, we want to torch Newville. Isn't that what they said, Pastor Kurt? Now think about this. Men, women, and children. These two wonderful, caring, pastoral guys wanted to burn up the whole village because they didn't like the way they were treated and they didn't want to hear the gospel. Yeah. So whatever Jesus saw in them, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have seen in them. Then John, okay, this same guy, is the guy leaning on Jesus' chest at the Last Supper, and he's described as the disciple that Jesus loved. Come on. So 3 years with Jesus completely changed these guys. Peter, he stood up on the day of Pentecost and 1,000 people joined the church. Yeah? So think of Paul or Saul. We mentioned this before. He was a terrorist. Today he'd be part of ISIS or some group like that. He went into Christians' homes and drug them out. He knocked on your door. Bob Townsley, I hear you go to church, a Christian Life Community Church. You're coming against our religion. Okay? You're coming against the Jewish religion. You're shaking it up. That's not the God that we believe in. And we're dragging you and your family out to jail. Women, children. And somehow, Jesus chose him. Really? Really, really, really? Changed him. Showed up on his way to do that. He had letters with him of permission to arrest Christians and drag them back to Jerusalem. And on the way, God shows up and blinds him. And then he sends a normal person, you or I, to share a prophetic word with him that, hey, I have plans for your life. And what you were doing, that was not it. So maybe you need to find out what it is that I have planned for your life. Absolutely don't understand God in those kind of situations. That man ended up being an evangelist, a missionary. He planted churches. He set pastors in place. He wrote a majority of the New Testament. We're reading what a former terrorist wrote, inspired by the Holy Spirit. If any of those three guys, John, Peter, or Saul, walked into this church, smelling like lumberjacks, talking like them, smoking a cigarette before they come in, maybe bringing their bud along in with them, would they be accepted here? Would you want them to sit next to you? God must look at things differently than we do. And he looks at people differently than we do. So then we have Samuel and the people. The people had chosen Saul. They said, we want a king. The other nations have a king. We want a king. God was their king, and he had sent judges. Well, they didn't like God's idea of how to run a nation, so they came up with their own idea. They picked the tallest, strongest, most handsome guy. That's who we want as king. How'd that work out for you? Not so well. He disobeyed God left and right. So God says to the prophet Samuel, go to Jesse's house because I've picked. Oh, not the popular choice. I've picked one of his sons to be king. Now, if I was the prophet going and he had 7 sons, I would have wanted to know who, so it wouldn't have been a surprise. God doesn't always tell you that. So Samuel walks in, first son comes in, okay, 30-year-old guy probably, tall, strong, and he helped dad run the family farming business. Samuel goes, oh, well, that's an easy choice. God goes, nope, not him. Really, God, are you sure? Am I hearing you correctly? No, it's not him. Well, then it must be son number 2. So son number 2 comes out. He's 28 and a half, almost as tall, almost as strong, and he runs the other part of the family business. Samuel gets the oil. Where's my oil? That's him. That's him. God says, nope, not him. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And he goes to Jesse, I'm pretty sure I heard from God. And these are all your sons that showed up. And God has said, no, 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 the whole way through. I mean, now we're down to the little 18-year-old guy that doesn't even know what he wants to do, and he said no to him. So he said, well, I have the little stinky son out in the field with the sheep that sleeps out there, and he doesn't know anything about the family business because he's seventh in line to the throne, you know, seventh in line to help with the family business. So we've told him all his life he probably won't amount to anything. Oh. And he's out there, and you know what? We look out the window, and he's out there singing. We think maybe he's a little. And they said, well, let's bring him in and see what God says. So they bring him in the door, and God says, that's the next king of Israel. Excuse me? He's 14? I have no idea where I am in my notes. The Lord said to Samuel, looks aren't everything. Don't be impressed by looks or height. This is obviously the Message version. God judges differently than people do. We look at the outward. God, however, looks at the heart, what is inside someone. So what do we judge by? We judge by how someone is dressed, how they talk, what they do during the week, what we know about them, what we can see about them, how educated are they? You know, if we're going to have somebody as our pastor, let alone the king, he should at least have a college degree or a master's degree in education or in divinity, right? Or maybe what we notice is outward habits that we think they need to change. So that certainly disqualifies them. What would we have thought of David, the stinky little boy who spent his days living with and taking care of sheep? What was his speech like? How educated was he? How qualified would we judge him to be our king? We would see flaws and weaknesses. We would see what he needs to change before we could even consider him qualified. Maybe we've heard some things. You know, see, that's really important, what we heard. But God judges by their potential, what he sees in their hearts. Is there a love for God there? Is there a love for people there? Is there a willingness to be taught? Saul was not willing to be taught. Nobody could speak into Saul's life because Saul knew everything. Do they want to pursue truth? And are they willing to give themselves to serve others? Jesus was criticized because he was walking down the street, and remember he said he only did what he heard the Father saying. So he's walking by the street, and there's a tax collector's booth. Tax collectors were considered filth. Why? Because they were Jews that collected taxes for Rome, and the nation of Israel was occupied by a foreign power. So that would be like the United States being occupied by Russia, and you say, sure, I'll collect taxes for Russia. And not only that, because then I would get 10% back as my commission, but if Kurt and his family owed $100, I would write down that they owed $150. I would get my $15, but I'd also get an extra $50. And that's what they did. So they were known as filth and cheats. Nobody associated with them. And that's why he said, if I've stolen something from anybody. He didn't say because I've collected taxes from them. He knew that he had added onto the bill, he said, I'll pay it back double. But Jesus, he's walking by the booth, and Father God says, yeah, that's him right there. Okay, I have to be careful because there's a Matt here, and I'm talking about Matthew. So there's a Matthew, or I could do the one from the book of Luke, and they call him Levi. So Levi, yeah, well, I don't have my Levi's on today. So he's to be one of your disciples. Now, Jesus accepted what the Father said. I'd go, I don't think so. So he says, hey, Matthew, come and follow me. This guy is filthy rich, not just called filthy. He was filthy rich. He leaves his occupation and says, yes, I'll follow Jesus. So he says, hey, I always have a feast at my house. You want to come for lunch? What's Jesus say? No, I can't associate with you. Nobody likes you. You're filth. Your language is bad. You might drink a cup of wine with lunch. And who knows what would be on your television? No, I'm not coming. Jesus goes, yeah, I'll come. So the Pharisees say to Jesus' disciples, what is he doing in his house? If I was one of his disciples, I'd probably go, I don't know. I don't understand Jesus half the time anyway. Which they didn't, right? They look at Jesus and say, I don't quite get what you're saying. And, you know, a couple times he got frustrated with them and said, you still don't get me? But Jesus was criticized for going to his house and eating lunch with a whole room full of sinners. Jesus said, I desire, in other words, I want, am looking for, and expecting from you mercy and not religious service. James 2:13 says, mercy triumphs over judgment. Judgment will be against those who show no mercy to others. So Jesus was interested in extending mercy. Part of honoring and respecting people is extending mercy. I need to grab a verse from the message here. Mercy triumphs over judgment, and people who judge will be judged. Ouch. I knew most of my message today would be more chatting with you than following my notes, so I'm sorry I didn't remember to get this ready. All right, now I'm in the right book, the right verse. I just need to get into the right version. Okay, so to make it a little clearer, Jesus does it this way. Don't pick on people. Don't jump on their faults, and don't criticize their failures. Unless, of course, you want the same treatment. A critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. It's easy to see a smudge on your neighbor's face and be oblivious to the ugly sneer on your own. Do you have the nerve to say, let me wash your face for you, when your own face needs washed? Don't play a holier-than-thou part. Just do your part. You might want instead to offer a washcloth to your neighbor. Don't be flippid. Sorry, I went a little too far. So he's making the point that the people that we're allowed to judge and should be judging is ourselves. It shouldn't be other people. He is the one who judges other people. He said, be careful with judging another man's servant. So you're all servants of God, and so it's up to him to do the judging and not us. So what should we be looking for if we're not supposed to be noticing the flaws in each other or the weaknesses in each other? What we should be seeing is what we just learned God wanted to see, what he was able to see. We should be looking at each other's potential. What has God done in you already? What is he doing presently? And what is his future plans and purposes for you? And that's what we can encourage each other about. So you could just even ask that. Okay, what is God doing in you presently? What do you get excited about when you think about? And you realize it'll be different for each one of us because God's giftings and callings are different in each of us. We talked about this a little at the men's group, didn't we, Pastor Kirk? That if your gifting and calling is worship, then that is your emphasis and that is your heart. That's what makes you leap. Is worship. If you're a teacher, you want to give people the most information you could possibly give them. If you're an evangelist, then you want to be out there evangelizing. And so for each of us, we have different things that we get excited about, different things that we feel is important. And so that's why we're a body with different parts. We're not all hands, we're not all feet. And so we embrace and recognize the gift that each of you are. That's what we want to do. We don't want to notice flaws. Flaws are easy to notice because they're outward. What is more difficult is to recognize what good God is doing in each of us, what gifts he's placed in each of us. I am jumping all over my notes and just chatting with you, which I know is completely different than what I normally do, and it's different for me as well. All right. So Jesus was trying to explain to people why this new covenant was so different. And the reason I am not giving people grace to sin is because what he did is he actually raised his expectation. And this is where he did this. You're familiar with the old command, don't murder. But I'm telling you that anyone who is so much as angry with a brother or sister is guilty of murder. Yeah, I like the commandment, don't kill, much better. That was easier, right? Because I haven't done that and I don't plan to do that. That? Yeah, that's a little tougher. Carelessly calling your brother an idiot? Yeah, you just might find yourself hauled off to court. Thoughtlessly yelling stupid at your sister? You're on the brink of burning in hell. Words are powerful. This is how I want you to conduct yourself. If you enter your place of worship and you're about to make an offering and you suddenly remember a grudge that you have or someone has against you, leave your offering. Go to your friend. Make things right. Then come back and work things out with God. You know the next commandment as well. Don't commit adultery. But don't think that you've preserved your virtue simply by not doing that. Your heart can be corrupted by lust even quicker than by what your body does. Yeah. So the New Testament is about doing what pleases God and not doing what displeases God. So Jesus was telling these religious people, you can look at all the outside things and you can have everything in order on the outside. Like if you looked at my life, okay, my language is pretty well cleaned up. I don't smoke. I don't drink. But before God, is there things within my heart that he wants to deal with. He's not as interested on things on the outside. To us, they're big things. To him, he's more interested in what is inside. So maybe when he looks in there, he's looking for things like pride, greed, envy, unforgiveness, hatred, bitterness, lust, selfishness, or jealousy. So we're okay if people have those because we don't know about them. But if they come in and they're not dressed the way we think someone should dress to come to church, and they have a really wild tattoo on their arm, then we make a judgment. Whereas God might be looking around the room and saying, I see some unforgiveness there. I see some selfishness over there. But we would judge those people as fine because it's interior things. We have to search for and look deeper than what is on the outside. No one would have thought that young shepherd boy would have been qualified to be a king. Even the prophet did not recognize it. No one would have picked Saul to be Paul, and yet Barnabas did exactly what I'm encouraging you to do. Barnabas looked at this terrorist, and I don't know how he did it, but he saw that God was working in his heart, and he took him and introduced him to all the apostles. And he said, you guys were a little too quick to judge, because I've been with him, and I've seen him sharing Jesus with other people. And yes, he was the guy who did all of these things, but I believe that God is calling him to something greater. And they go, well, I guess we'll listen to him then. But see, Barnabas, the son of encouragement, saw something no one else saw because he was looking for it. I want to be part of that group. Because I do exactly what I'm talking with you about. I do the same thing. I see somebody that's rough on the outside. I see somebody who has some things I know about them that they struggle with. And I'm like, well, I don't see how God's going to use them. Really, Steve? You know, so we all need to work on this. And this is one of the things that we're going to be talking about this afternoon. Who do we want to welcome here? And who is actually going to feel welcome if they show up? That's two different categories. We would not welcome Saul. We probably would not welcome Peter. Probably not welcome David when he came in from the field. Okay. All right. God sees greatness in you. And he's expecting you to step into that plan and destiny he has for you. Jeremiah 29:11. I know the plans I have for you, plans for good and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope. So we're going to move into communion.